From VOA, the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Here's your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Hello and welcome to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. I'm Rick Pantaleo. You may have heard about something called the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland, but are unfamiliar with what it is and what it does. The Large Hadron Collider, or LHC, at the European Council for Nuclear Research, or CERN, complex near Geneva, is the world's largest particle accelerator and collider, or atom smasher. The LHC was created by the international science community to help researchers uncover some of the mysteries of the universe at atomic and subatomic levels. The LHC accelerates and sends beams of subatomic particles called hadrons in opposite directions of the tunnel to a velocity that is close to the speed of light. When these beams of particles collide with each other and with special detectors mounted within the tunnel, scientists can watch and record reactions caused by these collisions. Today we're going to learn a little about the field of science called particle physics, the Large Hadron Collider, and the valuable research data that it produces for scientists all over the world. My guest for today's program is Suyog Shrestha, an assistant professor of physics at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. And he's a physicist and research associate with the ATLAS experiment at CERN's Large Hadron Collider. Professor Shrestha, I know that this question requires a very complex answer, but could you please give me a brief, simple-to-understand, layperson's understanding of what particle physics is?
Physics has become a very broad field in the past several hundred years. And in particle physics, what we're trying to do is really try to understand what the fundamental building blocks of matter is, like what we are made up of and how these fundamental building blocks interact with each other, and how that gives rise to composite particles such as atoms. And once you have atoms, then you can already understand a lot that are at human scale. You know, like oxygen and carbon and other elements. So we really want to understand these building blocks, such as the electron and proton and neutron, which make up atoms. Once you have electrons, protons, and neutrons, you have atoms. And we're trying to understand even further down, trying to see if electrons are further made up of smaller particles that we don't know yet. As far as we know, electrons are really elementary, really point-like simple particles. But we know protons and neutrons are not. Those are composed of even smaller particles called quarks and gluons. And we're really trying to understand how all of these particles interact with each other and give rise to protons and neutrons, for example, and then to atoms.
It sounds like when we're talking about the universe, we're talking about this wide expanse that just goes on forever in perpetuity. And it seems as though the field of particle physics seems to be the exact opposite. In other words, the same expanse also includes going deep into matter and into atomic particles and subatomic particles. You're trying to dig further as far as you can into these particles and subatomic particles. Is that true?
Yes, that is certainly true. When we look for these subatomic particles, when we smash protons, for example, and then try to look what's happening inside, we're really not only trying to understand these very, very tiny particles, but also looking back in time in the evolution of the cosmos and really looking at a few seconds after the Big Bang, what the conditions were like back then, and how these particles then coalesces to make ordinary matter. So in some sense, it's really looking back in time as well.
Could you give us an explanation of what the standard model is? I understand that's very important within particle physics.
So the standard model is really the standard model in the sense that it's a theory that has been developed over last 100 or so years by several physicists, theorists, and experimentalists. It's a very active collaboration between the theorists and the experimentalists. And this has been developed over the last 100 years or so. What it tells us is that all ordinary matter will come to non-ordinary matter, such as dark matter later, but all ordinary matter that we see around us are made up of some simple elementary particles, such as quarks, gluons, and leptons. So when we think of electrons, we think of them as elementary particles. They are not composed of anything smaller than electrons. Then there are these quarks, which make protons. And then protons, neutrons, and electrons make atoms. So standard model describes all of these fundamental particles and their interactions. And it's really a great theory because all its predictions that it has made over the last 50, 60 years have been experimentally verified. So we know that most of the predictions have been verified. There are still some predictions we're still working on, but it's a great theory in that it describes a lot and it's not been proven to be wrong yet. It has its limitations, but it's worked out great so far. And the Higgs boson, which was discovered in 2012, was one of the last pieces of the standard model to be discovered, really completing the theory.
So, Young, are particle physics and quantum physics the same thing?
So quantum physics is a very broad term. Quantum physics has applications in many different areas. So quantum physics really has these fundamental axioms that are applicable to particle physics, that is also applicable to condensed matter physics, to astroparticle physics, to electronics, and so many other branches of physics. Whereas particle physics really tries to understand matter in terms of its fundamental components, and quantum physics, the axioms of quantum physics are used in particle physics as well.
And I've heard that quantum mechanics and relativity, something proposed by Albert Einstein, aren't compatible. Is this true? And is there a simple explanation for this?
As far as we know, general relativity works fantastic. It's made predictions that we're still testing 100 years after, and we're verifying that the theory still is correct. And quantum mechanics works, and general relativity works on large scale, the suns, galaxies, the cosmos, and so forth, whereas particle physics or quantum physics really works at very, very small scale, atoms, molecules, protons, neutrons, and so forth. So it's been very difficult for physicists in general to unify the two theories, one that's dealing with large-scale structures, the other dealing with really small-scale atoms and small-scale structures. So as far as we know, there is no theory that unifies them and has testable predictions. So there are theories such as string theories, which are one of the top candidates for unifying gravity with quantum physics or quantum mechanics. But it's hard to verify those theories because there are no testable predictions that we can carry out in a lab.
You're involved with the ATLAS experiment with the Large Hadron Collider, and the Large Hadron Collider began its third run a few weeks ago. So could you tell us, what is the Large Hadron Collider? What does it do, and how do scientists use it?
Yeah, so LHC, the Large Hadron Collider, is the largest particle accelerator in the world. So why we need something so large is we need a lot of energy to collide these protons and smash these protons together so that we can break them, so to say. We look inside by smashing them and breaking them apart and see what other particles are inside protons, like how these particles are interacting. So the Large Hadron Collider came into operation in 2008. And, the big physics question we're trying to answer at the time was whether or not the Higgs boson really exists. So Higgs boson is really I cannot emphasize it enough. It's a very important particle in elementary particle physics. It's a very unique particle. It was theorized back in the 60s. Back then, there was no mechanism in which the mechanism to give these elementary particles their masses. Or more correctly, there was no way to give certain particles masses, whereas it was known experimentally that those particles would have mass, and I'll come back to that later. So this Higgs field was theorized back in the 60s by several physicists, Peter Higgs among them. And then if that field really exists, then there had to be something, a particle associated with that field, and that was called the Higgs boson, or that came to be called the Higgs boson. And then it was so crucial that many, many physicists from around the world for several decades invested their time and effort trying to discover that particle, designing experiments, building accelerators, and so forth. And the LHC was one of those efforts, where there were efforts in the US as well. One of them was canceled. The Fermi lab ran fantastic experiments and was just short of discovering the Higgs. It discovered other particles, but not the Higgs. even bigger collider that was proposed in Texas and was partially built was canceled back in the 90s. But the Large Hadron Collider moved on and finally came online in 2008. And we collected data between 2008 and then 12. And with those data, you know, after mining through massive amount of data, we're finally able to verify that this Higgs boson really exists. And we're able to measure its mass and its other properties.
Was the detected Higgs boson the same as what Peter Higgs and his colleagues predicted back in 1964?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, actually. So, you know, when we discovered this particle in 2012, we were very careful in what we were saying because we discovered something that looked very much like the Higgs boson. Its mass was not predicted by the theory, so we had to look for it at various mass ranges. But when we found it at about 125 GeV, it looked very much like the Higgs boson. It was decaying into photons. It was decaying into what we call the gauge bosons, W and Z bosons, and so forth. But there were many properties that still needed to be verified experimentally. So we were very careful in what we were saying. We're saying we have discovered a boson that looks like the standard model Higgs boson, but more and more properties need to be verified. And since then, the discovery in 2012, since then, we have taken even more data. So in RON 1, the Higgs boson was discovered. And then in RON 2, which lasted between 2015 and 2018, we have measured many of the other properties of the Higgs boson. We have measured its mass more precisely. We have measured how it interacts with other particles, and all those predictions so far are as predicted by the theory.
So, Professor, what is so special about the Higgs boson? Why was it initially called the God particle?
I think there is a story behind why it was called the God particle, although, you know, many of us don't really like the name. I think the particle is really crucial because if something like the Higgs boson did not exist, then we would have at least theoretically no mechanism to give mass to the elementary particles, like what we are made up of, for example. You know, we are made up of atoms. Atoms are made up of electrons, protons, and neutrons. Protons and neutrons are further made up of quarks and gluons. These quarks, these electrons, they need to have mass. Otherwise, we only have radiation, right? If they don't have mass, they are no particles, right? So we wouldn't be existing. And so we didn't know how to make sense of that. And so this particle or this field was theorized with an associated particle, the Higgs boson. And that made a lot of sense because we had a mechanism now, theoretically, to give masses to the fundamental particles. It was so important, but it was just very elusive. Physicists were not able to find the Higgs boson. And so when Leon Lederman, I think he was the director of Fermi National Lab outside of Chicago, he wrote a book about the importance of the Higgs boson, the importance of the collider that was proposed to be built in Texas and why it was canceled. It is a very important particle, that is true, but the God particle has several different connotations. So The particle, especially in that it gives masses to elementary particles, but also is very unique in its own ways. There are no other elementary particles which has a property which we call in quantum physics, which we call spin of a particle. This is the only particle that has spin zero. All other particles that we know of, elementary particles that we know of, have either one or one half. But this is very unique in that sense also. And it's also a particle that interacts with itself.
Well, what do you mean by spin when you're talking about these particles?
Yeah, spin is, I mean, this is a bad analogy, you know, and all analogies have their limitations. But normally, when we discuss spin, we can think of it as, you know, if you have the Earth, for example, you know, the Earth has angular momentum. It goes around the sun. So it has this momentum, this angular momentum around the sun, but it also spins around its own axis. So it has that type of angular momentum as well. It spins about its own axis. And the fundamental particles also have a property very similar to that. It's not exact because fundamental particles are really point particles. They have no extension of mass around them like the Earth does. But it's a fundamentally quantum property of elementary particles, which sometimes can be thought of as particles spinning about its own axis.
Let's take a break now. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. I'd like to remind you that Press Conference USA is available for free download at voaafrica.com and other podcast websites. You can connect with us on Facebook at VOA Current Affairs, on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA, or by email at pcusavoanews.com. Now, back to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Today, we're talking about the Large Hadron Collider and the valuable research data it produces for scientists. My guest for today's program is Suyog Shrestha, an assistant professor of physics at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. And he's a physicist and research associate with the ATLAS experiment at CERN's Large Hadron Collider. Professor, let's get back to the Large Hadron Collider. What is the mission of the LHC and why does it exist?
Yeah, so in the beginning, like when this was proposed, designed, and built, the really big goals was to verify if or not the Higgs boson exists. Now that we know the Higgs boson exists, there is still a lot of questions, fundamental questions in particle physics that we have no answers for. And so it's very important that we continue to do research and try to find answers to those questions. So there are precision measurement of the Higgs boson that can be already used as a tool to search for new laws of physics. One of the biggest outstanding questions we have at the moment is the existence of dark matter. From astrophysics, we know that there is something out there that interacts gravitationally that affects the rotation of the galaxies, but we have no idea what it is. It does not interact very much with our detectors. And so, and hence the name dark matter. And so what we know is that if something like that exists, it has to interact with the fundamental particles that we already know, you know, the standard model particles. And so now the goal has become, we want to understand what dark matter is and can we produce it at the LHC? Will the Higgs boson interact with the dark matter? These are the questions that are still outstanding and we'd like to understand better. And this is just one of the examples. There are also questions about why is there so much more matter in the universe than antimatter, where antimatter is basically like matter particles. Like a simple example would be we have an electron which is negatively charged. Anti-electron would be positively charged electron. So in every respect, like the electron, but positively charged. So that is antimatter. So for all ordinary matter particles, we have a set of their own antiparticles. So according to the Big Bang theory, you know, we'll have equal amount of matter and antimatter when the universe started. But presently, we only see matter. There is no antimatter out there. And this is a fundamental question we have no answer to either. And so continuing to run the LHC will hopefully help to shed light on some of this as well.
Professor, back when the LHC was about to go online and people were excited about what it promised to do, for the first time, there were rumors of dread and destruction. I remember people kind of freaking out over it, that once the LHC began operations, a black hole would be generated and it would start swallowing the Earth. Can you share your own thoughts on how people misunderstood the LHC to such preposterous degrees?
The LHC is safe. Let me first start by saying that. You know, we've been running it for over 12, 13 years. It's safe. I think one misunderstanding may be that, you know, black hole in public is understood as, and rightfully so, you know, the cosmological, the black holes in at the middle of the galaxies are, you know, just eating out all the matter that approaches black holes. When we were discussing black holes at the LHC, these are quantum black holes. These are very, very tiny black holes that exist for a fraction of a second. And these are theoretical models, right, that predict these black holes, but they immediately decay into something else. They're not going to sit around there, you know, eating out the accelerator and then Switzerland and France and the rest of the Earth. It's not like that. They just immediately decay into some other particles that we were hoping to predict. So black holes, no, LHC is safe.
Okay. So no black hole and no antimatter.
We have not produced any black holes. Antimatter is actually something that we generate all the time in this proton-proton collision. When these protons collide, we see both matter particles and antimatter particles flying out. but they immediately interact with other particles that we can detect. And what we see eventually is just voltages in the detectors. And we try to make sense of what happened at the collision by measuring these signatures in the detector.
I understand there are a number of experiments being conducted with the LHC, and of course, you're part of the ATLAS team. Can you tell me about some of the other experiments and what their goals and accomplishments are so far?
On the LHC itself, there are several experiments that are built around the ring. There are also other experiments that are carried out at CERN, but are not directly part of the LHC. ATLAS is one of those points, the one that's the ATLAS detector. And there are other experiments, the CMS, which is just on the other side of the ring and does physics that are very similar to what ATLAS does. ATLAS and CMS are what we call the general purpose detectors. They are general purpose in the sense that they are designed to do a broad range of physics analysis, whereas there are other detectors called ALICE and LHCb, which are designed for very specific purposes. So the LHC not only collides protons, actually there is a few weeks in a year where it also collides heavy ions, like lead ions, for example. And ALICE is specifically designed to study the collision of lead ions and to create what we call quark gluon plasma, like quark gluon plasma, like a soup of quarks and gluons that existed a few seconds after the Big Bang. And that helps us, that allows us to study these quarks and gluons in sort of a free state, which otherwise would not be accessible to us. So it's very specifically designed for studying that process. And there is LHCb, another big, these four are the four biggest detectors built around the LHC. There is the LHCb, which studies B physics. We call B physics, meaning it mostly studies hadrons, composite particles that are made up of B quark. B quark is one of the quarks in the standard model. And so the goal for LHCb is really try to understand the asymmetry between matter and antimatter in the universe. So these are the four big detectors built around the LHC. There are also smaller experiments that have either come online or are in the process of coming online, being added to the ring, such as Phaser, which is a forward detector very close to the ATLAS detector. By forward, we mean ATLAS and CMS detectors. They basically, when the protons collide, things fly. The debris from the collision, they fly, and the detector basically takes pictures of them. And this mostly happens, you know, close to the, at an angle that's more, not close to the beam pipe, let me put it that way. Whereas Phaser, and there are some other experiments which we try to go closer to the beam line and see what's happening there.
Professor, how did you become involved with the ATLAS team? What is your role with the team?
So I started on ATLAS as a PhD student. I was a PhD student at Iowa State University, and I was looking for a topic for my thesis. I had done some, you know, condensed matter research as an undergrad, some theoretical research as an undergrad, and in grad school, I was really looking for a good thesis topic, and quantum black hole was one of the topics that really excited me. There were seminars given by professors working on their research, and one of the professors, who then became my PhD thesis advisor, discussed the physics of LHC and all the opportunities for graduate students to join and contribute. And so, you know, I was just like fascinated by quantum black hole. And, you know, I also had this curiosity from my high school about if quarks are really made up of something else. Are quarks really fundamental? Are, you know, proton, in, for a long time in middle school, I thought was fundamental. Like they were just proton. I did not know they were further made up of quarks. In high school, I learned that they were made up of quarks. And, you know, that question had remained with me. I was like, okay, this is what I'll do. And that's how I became involved with the ATLAS experiment. And I mostly do, at the moment, measurement of the Higgs boson. Basically, the Higgs already discovered, but we still need to do many measurements to precision measurements is what we call them, because at the moment, many of the results that we have uncertainty of 5 to 10% or so. And these uncertainties allow for different theories to be verified, meaning different theoretical possibilities are allowed within these uncertainties. So what we want to do and what my role is really trying to measure these properties more and more precisely so that we either rule out some theories or we know the theories are correct all the way, or especially the Standard Model.
I understand that the Large Hadron Collider is operated in a series of runs. The first run began when the Large Hadron Collider was first switched on. Then there was a pause in operations, and then began run number two, and then another pause in operation, and then recently run number three began. What are scientists hoping to learn from run number three?
Yeah, so these runs are, you know, I like to think of them as different versions of software, right? You know, when we have an operating system 1.0 and then 1.1 and then 1.2, and then so much changes happen that you go to 2.0. These runs are very similar in the sense that we first started out with run one with a set of configuration for the accelerator, the LHC, that is, and for the different detectors. So there is a set of hardware, software, computing infrastructure that all went in to make run one happen. And we collected data and we discovered the Higgs boson. We made many measurements. We ruled out many theoretical possibilities. And then we had to shut down the accelerator and the detectors for 2 or 3 years so that maintenance can be done, so that some of the detectors can be upgraded, some of them can be repaired so that new cables can be installed and so forth. And that takes a long time. By long time, I mean 2 to 3 years, right? And after all these upgrades, there is a new set of configuration for the accelerator, for all the detectors, for all the experiments, new set of software, not like entirely new, but upgraded, updated set of software, computing infrastructures, and so forth. And sometimes there is also an increase in energy. So within run one, we slightly increase energy from 7 to 8 trillion electron volts. But run two was very different. We went from 8 trillion electron volts to 13 trillion electron volts. And that's the collision energy. And so with run three, what's happening is there is an increase in energy. So about 5%, we're going from 13 to 13.6 trillion electron volts. There is also increase in the rate of collision. And both of these mean there'll be a lot more data. To make more precise measurements, to reduce the error on our measurements, we need more data. You know, when we have more data, then the uncertainty goes down. And this is what we're really trying to do with run three. One is to make more and more precise measurement of the Higgs, because the Standard Model says the Higgs has to have these properties. And we have measured some of these properties, but they have errors on them. If we now really make more and more precise measurement, we may find out that the Standard Model is wrong for a certain sector. Maybe it does not behave as the theory predicts. This is why run three is crucial. We'll have more data to make more precise measurements.
Professor, I know the LHC is the world's largest particle collider now, but I understand that CERN has plans for a much larger one. Can you tell us about this future device?
Yeah, so there are a number of proposals in the global community, actually not just at CERN, for future accelerator program. So one of the ones that is discussed a lot at CERN, and several workshops have already taken place, is at the moment called FCC, the Future Circular Collider, that will have, you know, almost 10 times more collision energy. And that will be about 100 kilometers circumference. We built, you know, under the Alps, under Lake Geneva. It's a huge project that has been envisioned so that we can go higher in energy. So we can't go much higher in energy with the current machine. And so these new collider will have, at least it's proposed to have 100 trillion electron volts of center of mass energy or collision energy. And that will be able to produce particles that are much heavier than what we have seen so far.
Professor, I'm afraid that's all the time we have today. I want to thank you so very much for joining me and talking about particle physics and the Large Hadron Collider. I appreciate your insights as well.
Thank you so much, Rick. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about our research to a much broader audience. Really appreciate your time and the opportunity.
That was Suyog Shrestha, an assistant professor of physics at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. And he's a physicist and research associate with the ATLAS experiment at CERN's Large Hadron Collider. And that's all the time we have for this science edition of Press Conference USA. I'd like to thank you for listening to our program today. This is Rick Pantaleo, reminding you to be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.